Welcome to GleeCast,
the twice monthly
home of
movies about Glee or dancing or singing or something. It's just stuff we want to watch. Just go with it.
And casting. Here are your hosts, Emily and Erica.
Erica, tell me what you think about your friends at the top.
About my friends at the top?
Who do you think, beside yourself, was pick up the crop?
Buddha,
is he where it's at? Is who? Okay, I got to be careful because if I'm not careful, I could just sing the score of Jesus Christ Superstar this entire episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I won't be any help whatsoever.
You usually, it's just a matter of like repeat. Well, once we got to the chorus, I would have had you repeat, but it's fine. This is GleeCast. I'm Emily.
I'm Erica. Sorry, I was taking a sip of a drink.
I forgive you for that. Was it my blood?
Mm-mm.
For all you care, this wine could be my blood.
Please be careful. Don't start doing the whole show.
I gotta stop if I could do it.
Don't do the whole show.
As you may have guessed, today we are covering Jesus Christ Superstar, the 1973 film. And we will also talk about the 2000 video recording of the London production.
Yes.
Indeed.
It's kind of a two-for-one deal.
It is. Yeah. Every once in a while you get a bargain, you know?
Mostly because I watched the film and I was like, Emily, I have nothing to say about this. And I was like, there's this recording. It looks far more interesting. I'm going to watch it on YouTube. Let's talk about that, too.
And after I finished cursing her out under my breath, I said, sure.
Really? You were mad about that?
Oh, no, I wasn't. No. No, I enjoyed it because I always enjoy watching stage productions of musicals anyway. But it was just interesting to me. I was very curious how you would take this film. Now, Jesus Christ Superstar, I've like grown up with it. I think I got it for like my birthday when I was like 11 or 12. I don't know that it's one of my favorite movie musicals, but it's up there for me. And I just assumed everybody loved it. But then I slowly learned that not everybody does.
I've never seen any production of Jesus Christ Superstar. I'm completely unfamiliar with the music aside from Jesus Christ Superstar. Like, that's the only part I know.
Right.
I didn't really know anything about it except, you know, obviously it's the story of the crucifixion, the days leading up to the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, which I was raised Catholic, but I'm very rusty on my religious education. So I kept kind of going to you and Lisa and being like, so wait, who's this? Like, what's happening here? Just because I didn't recall things because it's not something that's relevant or important to me in my life. But still, I can watch like religious horror movies. I find them really interesting. Like, I find the idea of religion really interesting. I just don't buy into it myself.
Sure.
So I didn't have a problem with watching it. However, I can't imagine any child watching this, like,
Erica, I was a kid.
monochromatic, like, really just, like, I mean, again, it's a rock opera, so there's no talking, everything sung. Like, I can't imagine any child besides Emily being like, this is my favorite movie. Like, I don't know.
So listeners out there, if you are a weird kid like me, let me know on Facebook, GleeCast group. See, what's funny was, because I'm similar to you where I was also like pseudo-raised Catholic, but I am also not religious. But like growing up, I watched this like while I was with, I don't know if you had the same thing, like it, my church that I grew up sort of in, you didn't like go to Sunday school. You went to quote unquote religion class where like one of your friends' parents like ran group and you went there once a week and stuff. So because like Jesus Christ Superstar was my like the basis of like my understanding of this story, I remember sitting in religion class when like we were talking about this and I'm like, so Judas wasn't really that bad of a guy, right? Like, I mean, he was trying to help the poor and my teacher was very upset with that. And I just didn't, I'm like, but that's what the movie told me.
That's what the movie said.
I mean, what? He wanted to help people. He didn't understand like, and him and Jesus had different ways of thinking about it. So this, you know, certainly shaped things for me. So I have a long relationship with this movie.
You do.
I would not just with the movie, but with the show. So, I mean, I saw the movie as a kid growing up. I owned it. I watched it. I loved it. I have seen quite a few productions. I'd seen like one really good community theater production of it when I was young. When I was living in Moscow, I saw a production of it in Russian. That was amazing. I saw the, I guess it was about 1999, 2000, the Broadway revival of it, which is very similar to the production we watched. I saw that with Tony Vincent and Glenn Carter. And I saw probably the coolest thing ever was one of the community theaters in Patchogue when I grew up did a production where, like, they had some, like, crazy experimental dude running the, like, stage that summer. And what he did was he did a production of Batman and the Power Rangers to the music of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Well, that's weird.
Where it was Batman was sort of the Jesus role. You had, like, Catwoman, I think, was kind of Mary Magdalene. The Penguin got to sing Herod's song. So you had, like, Batman and Power Ranger villains. And the whole thing was about, like, saving Gotham, and the Power Rangers are trying to help Batman, and Batman gets kidnapped. And, like, but it was all the music. Like, the words were, all the lyrics were changed to suit the story. But the score was pure Jesus Christ Superstar. I have never been able to find out if that went anywhere else or if this, I mean, I don't know how he could really have gotten away with it as far as rights go. But it was like this, I was probably about 12 when I saw it, and it was incredible. I wish I could track it down or, like, learn more about it, but that's out there somewhere, folks. So yeah, I've, like, always had a, like, relationship with this movie and with this musical. And again, not for religious reasons, just for, I really like the music. And I really like the movie, but we'll get into that. So you really had no familiarity with the show or with the music, correct?
Zero.
Okay. So a quick background of it. It originated as a kind of, like, rock album, like, concept album, which also happened with Phantom of the Opera later, where it was Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice, who Tim Rice has gone on to do, as Erica has said, a lot of Disney stuff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber would also do Evita together and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, I think. But so this, it was a rock album. It had, and then, like, that was a huge hit. So then they kind of crafted it into a stage show. Wasn't the biggest hit as a stage show. I think it did better in London when it came to Broadway. It didn't run very long, but the cast was interesting. They had Ben Vereen in the Judas role. Ben Vereen got sick. Carl Anderson took over, and then they rotated the part. And then in 1973, they made a fairly decently budgeted film, which we will talk about today, directed by Norman Jewison, who was a big director in the 70s. The other thing that our listeners might know him from was he directed the film version of Fiddler on the Roof.
Which I also have no relationship with and have not seen.
I'm not the biggest, I'm just not as close to that musical. The movie is good. I think the movie does what it's supposed to with that material. But I think, to me, this movie is, I think this is a very special movie musical to me, anyway.
It is.
Yeah, indeed. So the movie, 1973, primarily shot in Israel and the Middle East, filmed entirely outside. Very little sound stages built. This is obviously all of it's dubbed over in post because they're literally on a mountain with wind running at them as they're lip syncing. Most of the cast was all refugees from either the Broadway or London production. So Ted Neely, who played Jesus, had played a couple of different roles in the stage show. Carl Anderson was the understudy for Judas. Yvonne Elliman, who plays Mary, was from the original concept album. So it was, you know, the entire cast is pretty much people who came directly from the stage show, which, as we've seen, is something that, like, we always want to see, but a la Rent doesn't always work out.
Yes.
In this case, I personally think it does. Other random people who were in the movie include Patti LuPone's brother.
Okay.
He's, like, one of the apostles. I think I could see which one he is because there's a dude who kind of looked like Patti LuPone. And, of course, Josh Mostel, who plays King Herod, who, did you recognize him from anything?
He's one of those guys that I felt like looked familiar.
He's been in a lot of things. I think what our generation would know him best from is Billy Madison. He's the principal.
I don't know. I haven't seen Billy Madison in years.
Okay.
I didn't have that special relationship with Billy Madison that a lot of people our age
do. I understand. The fun fact about Josh Mostel is his father, Zero Mostel, who is very famous musical actor of the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s. Zero Mostel, Norman Jewison directed Fiddler on the Roof. Zero Mostel originated the role of Tevye on Broadway, but Norman Jewison did not cast him in Fiddler on the Roof. He did not want to work with him. He wanted somebody a little less big, basically, for the role. So he cast another actor named Topol. And so Zero Mostel was very angry when his son took the part in Jesus Christ Superstar, because he said, why doesn't Norman Jewison just go get Topol's son for the part? Which I always found that fun musical theater geek trivia. Anyway, most of the cast continued to tour in Jesus Christ Superstar for most of their lives. Carl Anderson just did a lot of stage work and was always Judas. Yvonne Elliman was the original singer of If I Can't Have You. So she was more singing than acting. Ted Neely continues to act. He was in Django Unchained, apparently, which I have not seen yet.
Well, Ted Neely, do you know that creepy fact about Ted Neely that Lisa shared with me?
Ooh, I don't know if I do. I know a creepy fact about Glenn Carter.
It's on IMDb too, but he apparently, until very recently, like within the past couple of years, continued to play Jesus in...
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Jesus wasn't an old man. He was 30, right?
33.
Yeah. I think he took it a little too far.
People were paying to see it, though. People wanted to go see it.
Really?
Carl Anderson did it, and Carl Anderson died fairly young. I think he was around 54 or so. He died of leukemia. But he was also touring as Judas until the end.
That's crazy to me.
Well, it's just, to me, it's crazy that they still had voices at that point.
Well, yeah, but...
Like, those men do not smoke, and they drink a lot of tea. That's my theory on
like
that.
Like, how many times can you perform the same thing over and over again? I wouldn't want to do that for... past 35 years, like...
Yeah, that's a good point. Or at least, like, switch roles at a certain point. Like,
yeah.
Hey, Carl, you be Jesus today. I'm going to be Jesus.
You have to know everybody's part. You could just switch
it up.
At
this point, like, I know everybody's part. And that's something I like about this movie and this the soundtrack. I can kind of sing the girl parts because they're in a pretty low range. So maybe that's why I always enjoyed this musical, was I could sing along to it. I can't hit the male notes because they go high. Also fun trivia about this movie, John Travolta apparently auditioned.
Oh.
He was not cast, but the producer did, like, remember him later for Saturday Night Fever. Or so IMDb tells me.
Or so they tell you.
So the movie is, as we said, it is, you know, the last couple, it's like the last week of Jesus' life. So, Jesus is, at this point, has caught the ire of the Jewish high priests, who think that he's going to be trouble and that we should kill him. Judas, who's been his right-hand man, is kind of like, dude, they're going to kill you. We should stop doing this. And you just think you're higher than you're supposed to be now. And so it's essentially that, and then the story of him getting tortured and crucified.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The music, a couple of the songs... People, like, everybody probably knows Superstar, and also I Don't Know How to Love Him was also, like, a big hit. Like, it was kind of one of those crossover hits that became a pop standard as well. Which, I mean, had you heard that song before?
No.
Really?
Interesting. Really. I feel like I've heard the name of it, but I never actually heard the song itself.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And it's pretty much... That's the story. That's what we got.
Yeah. I feel like there's not much for us to say about the story because it's a story.
Right. It's 10 pages of the Bible you're reading.
So I'll talk to you about my issues with the movie, okay. Which I basically said already. This was the most monochromatic movie. It may as well have been in black and white with a sepia tone.
But see, like, to me, it's just they're out on the mountains. That's
I know, but it's so boring. Like, it was the 70s. There were two scenes where they utilized... Well, there's one scene where they utilize color, two scenes where they utilize the 70s, but it was just like sand, and then everybody was wearing some version of the same color as the sand, and it was just so boring to look at, and every set was the same, and I was just like, oh my god, they're singing again, and walking over here, there's a mountain over there, and now we're on top of the mountain, now we're in a cave, they're singing again. Like, I was just so bored, and that's not to say that the music was bad. Like, I didn't have any issues with the music. Obviously, it's, you know, it comes from who it comes from. It's well-written and performed and all that. It was just so miserable to look at.
See, I love, actually, I absolutely love the filming style. I love that it's outside and that, like, because the challenge with musicals a lot is you want to get, like, the scope across, but, you know, a lot of times you're restricted by a soundstage or by whatever you have. And in this case, I feel like, you know, if Carl Anderson wanted to run 2 miles to sing his song, he could have, because it was like, okay, Carl, go. You just, we're playing the track, you lip sing along, camera's going to follow you. You do what you got to do. Well, like, there's something I really like about the freeness of the filming.
I don't know. And even that first song, I just, like, I was like, what's he thinking about? Like, I just, like, couldn't pay attention, because he's just singing to himself on a mountain. And then when I watched the 2000 production, mm-hmm. where Judas is essentially speaking to Jesus, that made so much more sense to me. I was like, oh, like, I get this now. Like, he's telling him, these people are going to turn on you.
Right.
Like, in the movie, I feel like Judas had all these opinions, but it felt like they were kept to himself because he was 6 miles away singing by himself on a mountain, and Jesus was all the way over there just, like, hanging
Jesus
out with his
Palestine,
people.
Carl's in Israel.
Exactly. Like, I don't know. The stage production we watched just made so much more sense to me. Like, and it wasn't performance. It was literally mm-hmm. the staging. Like, I just understood, not that I didn't understand what was going on in the movie, but it just spoke to me clearer than the movie did.
Okay, I can see that.
Because in Judas is standing next to Jesus and saying, "Hey, these hey, people, dude, they're gonna kill you. And in the other one, he's just like, "They're gonna kill you.
Can you hear me?"
And I was like, he's getting so angry, but he didn't actually tell him that. He was all the way over there. I don't know.
There was something I liked in the stage performance that I thought it kind of got it across clearer was when Simon is singing, which in the stage production is Tony Vincent, who, when I saw it on Broadway, Tony Vincent ended up playing Judas on Broadway and then was in Rock of Ages, and, like, Tony Vincent's name you might know because he was on The Voice, right?
Yeah, he was on The Voice. He made it pretty far, too.
Yeah, he was our good friend Betsy. He was, like, her number one crush for years. So I heard a lot about Tony Vincent for a while. But when in the Simon song, which is, "Cross you, know I love you, did you see I waved," that song, I felt like it got a little bit of the kind of persecution and anger that the people had towards the Roman Empire across a little better. Because mm-hmm. I think that's something in the film that maybe isn't there, is you have, like, the Jewish priests in the fabulous hats who are clearly, like, worried about what's going on, but you don't quite, like, they never really make the connection of, like, the people are being oppressed or anything. Whereas in the stage production, there was a little more anger in terms of, like, how how Simon and, like, his people, how they wanted a revolution. I thought that did get that was across better in the stage show, which had a little bit more in general of, like, a militaristic vibe. Like, even look at the costuming of Pilot in the stage show. He looked like M. Bison from Street Fighter. it was all very militaristic, and I think that got that across stronger than the movie does.
The other thing I think that the stage production did a little better was, even though they were on a sound stage and they were limited in position, I think the transitions and movements were clearer to me in the on that sound stage than they were out in the desert. Because I felt like you could see as they move from place to place, and, like, I got everybody's movement better. Mm-hmm. Like, after the when they get, after the angry, as I refer to it as the angry Jesus song, where he gets mad at everyone and throws everything around, and he's like, "Yep. This is my temple." Blah. Like, after that, in the
temple should be house of prayer. Yeah.
In the stage show, like, you see him just move to a different part of the stage, and in the movie, he's kind of, like, at this temple, and then he's in a cave. And I was like, did that happen one thing after another? And I didn't know how much time had passed. I was like, when is this guy going to get on the cross? What time is it? How many days has it been? Whereas the timing of everything seemed to transition and flow better in the stage production. I had more of an understanding of when it was nighttime and when it was daytime and when they were walking and when they were, like, and just their movements throughout the entire story seemed better. Whereas they just kind of, in the movie, they would just kind of, like, cut and then it'd be a different scene, and I didn't understand if that scene was immediately following the previous one, or if it was the next day, blah, blah.
I can understand that. Yeah. So
that was one of my other issues.
I can completely understand that. I guess for me, in part just because, like, I grew up with the musical, there's a lot that, like, just doesn't matter to me about some of the plotting and, like, the mechanics of that. I think for me, I'm just more interested in the music and the staging and everything that... there were never things that were unclear. I guess maybe, or maybe I just wasn't distracted by ever being confused by anything. And I'm trying to think what's, I feel like there are some differences in the stage show as far as like placement. I think like, I Don't Know How to Love Him comes earlier. And I know the one, there was one song added to the movie, which is the first introduction of the priests, Caiaphas and Annas, when they sing, like, the first time we meet them and they're basically singing about Jesus and what they're going to do, that was added to the movie and has never been in any other stage show. And I guess the thought was, oh, because otherwise when we meet them, we don't really know who they are and it's unclear. I don't think it's net. And the stage show doesn't have it. I don't think it's necessary to have it in there.
Yes.
I don't think it's in at all.
I still didn't know who they were. I asked you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I was like, who are the guys with the hats?
With the great hats. That was something I did really like in the stage show. I really liked the cast, the physical casting of them. Because you had, Annas is this, like, small, hairless, white man who looks like he has, like, alopecia. Like, he's just all, he's, like, gray almost in color. And Caiaphas is this big, scary, tall, burly black man. And
a very deep voice.
And there, I really liked how they were staged in the show. It just, it worked. They just instantly, whenever they came on, it was a different tone completely. And just the like physical casting of them, I thought worked really, really well. In the movie, it's fine because they have great hats. But yeah, that was something I really appreciated in the stage show.
Yeah, in the movie, they're just ultimately forgettable. Like, there's nothing about their appearance besides the funny hats that you're like, oh, it's those guys again. Do you want to talk about the casting of Ted Neely versus, I don't know the other guy's name?
No, Glenn Carter.
Glenn Carter, sorry.
No, I saw Glenn Carter on Broadway, and I don't know, I've never been crazy about him. I looked him up. Apparently, Glenn Carter is president of the Raelian movement in the UK. Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay, the Raelians, it's essentially a cult. It is a religion, or of sorts, that basically believes, and I apologize if any of our listeners are Raelians and I'm misinterpreting your religion. It is essentially a religion that believes in, not in, like, gods, but that we are descended from aliens.
Okay.
And the main thing that they were in the news for is cloning. Like, they're a big part of, like, they are gung-ho about cloning. And, like, there's a lot of, like, scientists who are aliens who have said that they've cloned people and stuff. Anyway, interesting side note. Glenn Carter is apparently, like, top-notch Raelian in Britain.
Very interesting.
Indeed. I personally prefer Ted Neely.
I think that Ted Neely looks more like our... imagining of Jesus, like
very
what
true.
How Christian religions
right. he's
portray
skinnier,
him.
He's a little like sadder eyed.
Yes.
Glenn Carter looks too like Glenn Carter
pretty.
Has like fabulous locks. Yeah.
Yes, he's very pretty. But I found Glenn Carter's Jesus a little more sympathetic than Ted Neely's. I kinda wanted to punch Ted Neely like, oh shut up already. Like, come on. And I found Glenn Carter a little more sympathetic. I was kind of like, yeah, all right, this guy, he's just trying to do what he wants, like the best thing for everyone. And Ted Neely, I was just like, shut up. Ted Neely also had Jennifer Aniston's haircut from the 90s.
He did.
By the way.
He had the Rachel.
He did. He had the Rachel, which I think
that is
also,
a little distracting. I would have been.
It was distracting and it bothered me.
Kind of portray, because really this is Judas's story more than Jesus.
Yeah.
The way I think Godspell is, oh, I forget which apostle, but Godspell is kind of another apostle's like view of Jesus. So with the casting, it is interesting, and I feel like I'm trying to remember other productions I've seen, and it's like one of those things. Like I always remember Judas, and I rarely remember Jesus. But Tim Rice had a good quote regarding, like, what the story is, which is, This is a quote from Tim Rice. It happens that we don't see Christ as God, but simply the right man at the right time at the right place.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, what's interesting about Jesus Christ Superstar is you can watch it, I think, as a Christian and find things that are, you know, kind of support your religion and your faith. You can watch it as an atheist and find things that support your, you know, not faith in Christianity. For me, I just enjoy it as a musical. But I think there is, like, different ways to approach it. And with both of them, I don't feel like either one of them is really supposed to be a god or is really supposed to be a powerful, like, all-knowing and everything else Jesus Christ. I do think Glenn Carter seems like a nicer Jesus. there is something about, like, he kind of has, like, kinder eyes, I guess, and seems more sympathetic.
Yeah.
Which I think is just one take on it. Whereas Ted Neely, it's more about the pain of, like, oh God, I've been doing this 3 years. You're like, oh, fuck you. 3 years, like, you could have gone longer. So yeah, it's kind of like a different, I don't know. To me, it's just very different approaches to it, I guess.
He's a little more sympathetic, Glenn Neely. I mean, I'm just combining their names, Glenn Carter. Which just makes me picture Nell Carter, by the way, when I say his name. And then do you want to talk about any other casting compare and contrast?
I feel like we have to talk about Judas.
Well, yes.
Essentially, he is the, you know.
I didn't know their names, so I didn't want to be like.
Okay, I'll help you out.
Thanks.
So in the movie, we have Carl Anderson, who played Judas for many years. And in the stage show, we have Jérôme Prédhon, something like that.
That poor man.
Jérôme Prédhon. His name sounds French. It's probably not, but. And again, very different Judases too.
Yeah. I think, again, I prefer the stage production. Okay. However, his vocals were awful.
He was
just very squeaky and like, I don't know. I feel like if he would like try and hit a run, I just felt like it was me trying to hit a run. Like it didn't feel like actual singing. It felt like someone trying to emulate what someone else did.
Yeah. It's a tough role to sing.
But I just feel like I liked him better but I think it might be because I just understood what was happening more. Like I think again, it comes back to the staging and how that I just related to that staging more because it gave me more information than the movie did.
Okay. I see that. There was something a little more human, I think, about the stage Judas, just in that, like, he seemed a little more sad. He seemed a little kind of, like, pettier, I guess, in times. Like, whenever he would deal with, like, Mary, like, he seemed more jealous, whereas in the movie, I think it's more about Judas to me in the film, it's more, he really feels like he has these beliefs and that Jesus is now kind of fucking with his beliefs almost. And it feels almost more like faith-based in the movie, whereas on the stage show, it felt more like he was jealous of Mary.
It felt like real human problems.
Yeah, I think so. And again, like,
which again makes it more relatable.
True. I mean, I've always loved Carl Anderson. I love him in the movie.
He was great. His performance was great. I think the reason I'm tending towards the other one is just because of staging. Like, I think he performed it really well, but had he been standing next to Jesus and telling him these things in song, it might have made more sense to me. Like,
fair enough. How did you, because the thing that I think, no matter what production you see, you always remember how they do Herod's song. How did you like the two different takes on that?
I enjoyed them both. I think it's safe to say that was my favorite part of both productions. I think I liked, I don't know, I liked the movie's portrayal of it better because it was so 70s.
Oh, God, yes.
It was wonderful. But I think it was an interesting take the way they did it in the stage production to be a little more like what was so 70s with the sequins and everything in the film. And then they took it in a more, I guess, like I don't know. What decade would that be?
It was like 20s, like, kind of vaudeville?
Not even. It wasn't really vaudeville. It was just like classier. Like he was in a tux and he had the sequin backup dancers. I would say almost like 50s, like late 50s. But
maybe.
That's more like rock and roll, early 60s.
Yeah. Yeah, you get the feeling like whenever, if you're a stage director and like you're given Jesus Christ Superstar, the first thing you think of is like, all right, how am I staging Herod's song? Because it's such a like relief kind of, because you have, you know, the movie gets very dark, obviously, and you know, you can only have so much fun with it, because even like the sequences where you could kind of go a little farther with, it's like, well, it's when Jesus is getting whipped.
Yeah.
Or it's like things like that where you don't really want to. You have to be careful how you use the humor. And then you get the Herod song, which is just comic relief and, you know, just 3 minutes of like, all right, what are we doing? Are we doing Can-Can Girls? Are we doing what? Yeah, that's always my favorite part of the movie and any production I've ever seen. Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. And now in the movie also does something pretty interesting, which is they sort of open the movie as if it is a busload of like a theater troupe driving around, stopping, and they're going to put on this production, right? So you have this, you know, this van pulls, stops in the middle of the desert, and all these actors, these people get out dressed in plain clothes, 70s, and they're getting into costume for Jesus Christ Superstar.
Is that what was happening?
What did you think was happening?
I had no idea. I had no fucking clue what was happening. I was just like, there's a bus? I thought this was about Jesus. I was just confused.
I don't remember the Volkswagen van.
Yeah. I don't remember this being in the Bible.
More attention in religion class.
I didn't know what was going on. I didn't. Now that you're saying it, I'm like, oh yeah, they were wearing bell bottoms, and then they were in like traditional clothing.
Then they were in bell bottoms that were like colored against the sand.
Yeah. Oh, that makes more sense now.
Okay, glad to help.
That wasn't really clear to me.
clearly.
Oh boy.
Okay, so now that you know that,
did you have a question?
I don't know. I guess I was curious what you thought, like why you thought they went with that choice.
Oh, I have no idea, because it made no sense to me. That was a weird choice. I was just like,
surely. My favorite aspect is when they pack up at the end, because remember, they packed up, they got back in the van, and they left. Remember, because then, like, Judas, spoiler alert, Judas dies because, you know, he hangs himself.
Yeah.
Remember, he gets back on the bus at the end?
I don't, actually. Yeah. But that makes more sense now.
Okay.
Yeah, you have Ghost Judas. He comes back and sings.
That's true. It does.
I like Ghost Judas.
In full-out 70s bell-bottom
fringe.
Yeah.
I did like his hanging better in the movie.
Well, that's good.
I think it was a little more dramatic. I like that he was wearing his rope belt and that's what he used to hang himself. I don't know. That appealed to me more so than the stage version where someone conveniently lowered a noose for him that he didn't have to make himself.
Again, one of the other things you probably think about immediately when directing a production of Jesus Christ Superstar is, how am I going to hang the actor that plays Judas without killing him?
Yes.
I believe there was one case where somebody did die doing that.
Oh, no.
It was like in South America or something. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah, you know, shit happens.
This is not Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Come on.
No, it is not. That's right. We like to protect our actors.
Yeah. But that was one of my first questions I asked Lisa, too, after I saw that he died. I was like, oh, how does he die in stage production?
Same thing.
Yeah, but I didn't know if it was, like, on stage or off. She said sometimes it's on stage, sometimes it's off stage.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the director.
Yep.
Anyway.
Usually it's all about that drop-down floor. That's the important part.
All right. That would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of boring, because then you don't have him hanging over everyone's head.
It's a good visual, yeah. Something to think about when you're directing your production.
Yes. For whatever reason, I have the visual I have of Judas hanging himself is from, I forget which 90s vampire movie, but the one where they said that vampires were descendants of Judas. Do you remember this one?
Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. I have two in my head.
Is it
Dracula 2000 or is it Demon Knight? Tales and Crypt and Demon Knight. Demon Knight. It's that Billy Zane is a demon.
It's probably Dracula 2000 because I've never seen the other one.
It totally is Dracula 2000 because now I can even remember the scene. Yeah, it's Dracula 2000.
I feel like I got really
excited because I saw that in the theater.
Because Johnny Lee Miller's in it. And I remember
Gerard Butler is Dracula.
Yeah. But he was Judas.
Yes.
Right? That was the whole thing.
Yes.
That he was the first vampire. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting. But that's the image of, oh, and Danny Masterson's in it. I love Danny Masterson. I want to watch this movie now. Is this on Netflix?
I don't know. There's like five of them that they've made since. There was like Dracula 2000 Part 2, and then it was like Dracula 3000. They made a few of them.
Really?
I think Gerard Butler was only in the first one, though.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, yeah. I would imagine so. I've been watching a lot of Angels, so now I really want to watch... Oh, Dracula 3000 is on now. That's not the one I want.
You can't see Dracula 3000 if you haven't seen Dracula 2500.
That would be great if there was Dracula 2500. unavailable. Damn it. I really want to watch that now. Oh yeah,
you know what? That's available on like some Wes Craven set, though. You can buy that on like a pack of like four movies, I think.
Maybe it's on the Amazon. I have Amazon Instant Streaming too.
You could check, but I think that might like because if there's no DVD for it, I'm pretty sure I've seen it on a like four pack of.
Oh no, it's I mean it's available on DVD. I just don't have streaming.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
I mean, I only have streaming. I don't get discs. That's what I was trying to say. Let's see, Amazon Instant Video. Where are you? We can continue talking about Jesus Christ Superstar.
There are no vampires in Jesus Christ Superstar that I can think of.
No.
Yeah, but there is, at the end of the day in the movie, they all pack up to go, except for Jesus, who they leave crucified there, which I always felt bad for that actor. But something interesting about that's important, rather, about both is that, like, you don't actually see the resurrection. Both movies end with he was just a man and he died that way. And that is, again, one way you could view it. More story about the story than in terms of, like, the actual faith and everything. Fun fact about this movie, Erica. So do you think this movie was a hit or what do you think?
I don't think it was a hit.
This was the eighth highest grossing film of,
really?
Of 1973.
What was before
this would have been like Captain America of last year.
That's crazy.
Yeah, eighth highest grossing film in 1973.
Did a lot of people not go to the movies in 1973?
I don't know. Now let's see. 1973 box office list. Let's see what else we had that year. Okay, Poseidon. Well, wait. This isn't going to be a perfect list, but I want to rank these now. Ranking top. Grossing films 1973. Okay, here we go. Now I just really need to see this whole list here. Okay, internet's helping me out. Come on. Okay, well, The Exorcist was number one that year.
Okay.
Which kind of makes sense that you would have Jesus Christ Superstar be so popular. It was a big religious thing for people. The Sting, number two, American Graffiti, Papillon. I have no idea what that is. The Way We Were, Magnum Force, Last Tango in Paris. Okay, this list is not giving me Jesus Christ Superstar, but according to the other IMDb, it was. Live and Let Die, which is one of my favorite Bonds. Robin Hood, Paper Moon, Serpico, Enter the Dragon. So this other list has Jesus Christ Superstar at number 13. But regardless, that's pretty high for, you know.
For a musical.
Very much, yeah. Okay, and this list also has it at number 13 or so. Above it was, I think I see why some lists have it in different places. It has to do with The Devil in Miss Jones ranked above it, but that was an adult film, so probably considered, you know. You had Serpico above it, but then Jesus Christ Superstar, and then after that, Walking Tall, Day of the Jackal. This made more money than Soylent Green.
All right, then. That's weird to me.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
This was just a big hit. It was a year where, I guess, religion was high on the mind. And it opened big, and just interesting that you would have, exactly, a musical about Jesus Christ with no stars. I mean, none of these actors were household names or have since become household names. But, I mean, you think about it, Passion of the Christ was, like, one of the highest grossing films the year it came out. So, people who like Jesus like to go to the movies. That's, I think, what we can take from them.
But wasn't it, like, heavily boycotted and picketed and stuff?
Yeah. This both the stage production and the movie were pretty controversial, both with Christians and Jews found something to be offended by in it.
Which is kind of silly.
Yeah, but I mean, that always happens. Sure. But in the end, enough other Christians and enough other Jews and or enough other people who had no caring of either way went to see it. So yeah, I mean, somewhat controversial. And I mean, you could certainly see why too with this movie. You also had a very interracial cast, which is another thing I love about this movie is you have just, you look at like the entire cast and you don't know how intentional it was or just how much of it was just circumstance, but you have every color in your cast, which I just think is, you know, always something smart to do.
Yes.
Indeed.
I just read one of my notes. It says, oh, okay, Herod's song. This turned bagels. Apparently there are bagels during Herod's song.
I don't remember bagels, but now I kind of want to.
Bagels. I was like, bagels? That's weird. Why did I write that? I think he was throwing bagels at Jesus.
Oh, yes, he does start to do that. I thought they were rocks, but...
Oh, yeah. I think they were rocks.
We all have different interpretations, I suppose.
Maybe I was hungry. Yeah. But I wrote bagels. Anyway, I feel like I don't have that much more to say about it besides bagels.
Okay, well, the film is on Instant Watch on Netflix.
Yes, it is. And you can watch the entire stage production on YouTube if you just YouTube Jesus Christ Superstar, like 2000.
And you'll get convenient Spanish subtitles.
Yes, you will. They are there. Just in case you wanted to know what they were saying in Spanish.
It's a useful tool, I think.
Did you find that? Do you think, because during the opening scene, there's a lot of walls with graffiti. Did you find that some of the graffiti was in Spanish and some of it wasn't?
I found the graffiti hilarious. When it started, I was like, oh God, this is going to be fun. Because yeah. The graffiti, and the problem with, and this, I'm sure this will come up again when we watch other stage productions of musicals, is stage productions are not designed for film. And in this one, obviously they redid a lot of things to work for, because this is not, it wasn't just a video recording of there's no audience in this production. It's purely like they took the stage production and then just tweaked things here and there to have it ready for film.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, there are certain aspects of performances, like Tony Vincent to me is a little much when you're watching him in this, because he's performing for the audience, not for the camera, I guess.
Yeah.
So he seems to be like going a little too far, whereas on stage it would have made perfect sense.
Broadway's bigger, yeah.
Exactly. And the same thing happens with some of the costuming and set choices, because like the costumes like are all, the coloring of the costumes is so bright and so like neon that it looks silly on film in some cases.
But that made it more interesting to me.
Well, it worked for you then. And again, it would have looked perfectly fitting if you were sitting in the Broadway audience watching it. On film, it just ends up, you know, it just kind of magnifies certain choices. And the graffiti was like, as soon as it started, I was like, oh, because the graffiti is like, again, primary colors, and it's very obvious. It's like, I love Jesus. And like,
But I did feel like some of it was like digitally taken out and put in Spanish for this the one we were
like,
watching.
Dios, Dios, Dios.
Yeah. I do have one high note from the film. Would you like to hear it?
Please.
It's the Romans Darth Vader-esque costuming that George Lucas clearly stole for Darth Vader.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because they had those big silly hats, and then they were like bare-chested with a jewel-encrusted rectangular thing that looked just like Darth Vader's thing in the cape. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
It was pretty great.
I certainly would not be surprised at all to learn that George Lucas was one of the millions of people who went to see, who paid money to make Jesus Christ Superstar the 8th or 11th highest grossing film in 1973.
Do you have, I feel like I discussed all my low notes because they were the issues I had, but do you have any higher low notes?
I guess my high notes are the hats, obviously, which is always in my hats. I know you don't, but I love the outdoor setting. I love that it's just filmed in this broad landscape where everything and anything can happen. And I really do love Carl Anderson as Judas. He's so good as a performer, and I'm just there with him. So those are my high notes.
Okay, then. Are we done talking about Jesus Christ Superstar?
I suppose we are. I'll be very interested to hear if our listeners have any thoughts of their own on it.
You can do that over at the Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
Just search for Gleecast.
Yep.
Okay, so I know I want to just keep picking Fast and the Furious films, but for our next show, I think what I'm actually going to do is do something to pair with this, in the sense that we can watch both a film version and a stage version that was filmed. That literally a stage version that was filmed, not like filmed on a soundstage, like filmed on stage.
On stage.
I'm going to work on getting us copies of it. So this might not actually happen, but hopefully it will, because I don't think it'll be that difficult to find. And it's in the sense also that it's a film that I do have a long storied history with.
I have no idea what you're going to say.
Really? It's exciting. It's not that hard to figure out. And you might want to kill me after I say it.
Oh my God. You're going to say Rock of Ages, aren't you?
No, I'm not actually. Oh, that's a good one though. But I don't think there's a Broadway recording of it. I love Rock of Ages. Rock of Ages is super fun. And that movie was way more fun than it had any right to be. So
Brandon said.
What?
Brandon said that too.
Yeah. It was, have you seen it?
No.
It was fun. The leads of that show are the most boring part of that show, and in the movie they're boring, but they're not bad. Like, it's a really fun show.
There are no Step Up 4 leads?
They're better than Step Up 4 leads.
Okay.
It's that cute little Spanish boy and Julianne Hough. Yeah.
I liked her in the Footloose movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. Yeah, no, I thought she was actually quite good
in
that part.
She's good. Like, she, and that, it's the same part. It's Sherry, she's, you know, I'm from a small town. I'm in the big city. It's what's her face from Coyote Ugly. It's,
oh, we have to do that one day. Yeah, anyway, you just got me excited.
Anyway, so to pair with this, we are going to do Rent.
Oh, shit. Oh, you motherfucker.
I know.
Oh, you're going to make me watch the movie production of Rent.
I'm going to make you watch the movie, but they also have the Rent live on Broadway.
Okay.
Which, it's phenomenal.
Well, what's funny is recently we were going through my DVDs, and I own Rent. I got it like really cheap at Blockbuster. And I think like I was trying to justify why I bought it because other reasons. But I know there's a commentary. Maybe I'll watch it with the commentary track.
You can. And I feel like you, well, how many times have you seen Rent?
I have only seen it in the theaters. So
I mean the Broadway production.
I only saw it one time. Oh. I saw it with, Manly Pope
and what's his face? I can't think of his name right now. Well, I've seen that particular production with Manly Pope and what's his face, that I can't remember his name right now. I've seen that one about 9 or 10 times, so I'm rather familiar with that one.
I listened to the soundtrack quite a bit in my 16th year on this planet, so I have a long relationship with the show.
Yeah, and I do too. So we could talk about something that I have. You know, a musical that I have a big relationship with, just like you do with Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So that's what we're doing next time, as long as we could find, because I was looking for it a little bit, the live on Broadway, and it's not on Netflix, and it's not on Amazon, and it's not on YouTube, but I feel like the library or something has to have it. Like,
you can track it down, yeah.
That's something that the library has, is musical versions of stage productions. I'm trying to remember the name of my library so I could look it up as I talk. But anyway, so that's what we'll do next time. And then perhaps the next time would be your pick, and then maybe the time after that we'll start Fast and the Furious.
Okay.
Because Fast and the Furious 6 looks like it comes out sometime in December. So okay. I want to make sure that that's out.
Time correctly.
And
I got
we should cover it. Even though it's 2 shows per month.
It's going to take us 9 months.
It will take us a little while to get to the 6th film. 6 months to get to the 6th film. But we'll just... we'll hold off on it for now.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. So that's what you guys have to look forward to.
Sounds good. I just checked the NYP, the New York Public Library. Rent is available, so I will request it.
Oh, wait. Let me check.
It's Rent:filmed live on Broadway.
Yeah, I knew that. I'm trying to get my library website to load.
Okay. I just have to now remember my password. For some reason, this is really weird. I'm very bad at remembering numbers, like phone numbers. I don't know your number. I don't know Brandon's number.
I don't know anyone's number.
But yeah. I know my library PIN. As soon as I sit down to type it, 0523862. Like, Like, I know my PIN number. I don't know how I remember these, like, 12-digit number, but I do.
That's kind of crazy. Yeah. I can't get the website to load right now. It's not cooperating. So I'll double check and we'll confirm it on the website or on the Gleecast page or something. But I'm sure I'll be able to get it. It shouldn't be an issue.
Okay. Right. So that's what we'll deal with next.
Yep. And we'll chat with you guys then.
All right. Goodbye, world.
Bye.